Okay, 1, 2, 3, 4.
5.
1, 2, 3, 4.
5.
There you go. It's always weird because I'm kind of saying 1 when you're saying 5 in my ears.
That's interesting.
Yeah, but it works, yeah. Man, and I make it work.
Awesome.
Rocking business.
Yay, we're back.
I'm gonna leave that on the start of one of the podcasts at some point. It'll just be us counting numbers.
This is how the sausage is made.
This is how we do it.
I forgot to turn on my on-air light and close my studio door. I'll be right back.
No problem. On-air light, man.
Hyper-professional.
I'm going to need that. If I move house, I'm getting that. I'm getting egg boxes all around the walls. I'm doing the lot.
There we go.
But, of course, I can't afford to live in London. So all of my
and I'm back.
Things will be Skype.
Hello.
Hannah there. I was just filling the dead air.
Nice.
How you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you? Not long time no speak. You were a guest on Potential Cast last night.
I was this
morning. That episode will be released last night.
That was astonishing and a real slap in the face for me because
Stop.
A bit of a different proposition, man.
Which is fine.
Right. Welcome to The Last Word, a Press Gang intro cast with Chris and Illyrio. I'm Chris.
I'm Illyrio.
I don't ever intend for us to always have like an episode in hand. I do want the audience to be up to date and then be able to. I'm sorry, I did a big burp right off the bat. Sorry about that, Pepe.
Couldn't
Max.
Tell. Thanks for making it obvious.
No problem. It'll be much clearer on my recording. However, it has worked out that way. So again, at time of recording, the audience haven't heard our episode for Deadline, but we have recorded it. Couple of things about Deadline I've recently discovered. It was kind of, remember I told you the working title was VIP, it was about Tommy Anderson or whatever his name is now, the world's most famous thingy.
Yes.
That was a completely separate episode in the, because I've been looking at the episode treatments. Deadline and VIP were two different ideas.
Really?
Yeah. So one was sort of for making next week's news and they were, the printers were going to like accept right up to the last minute, even typed stuff. And so I think they even like duplicated some handwritten pages to go in it as well. So it was a real slipshod edition at the end of the day. And it didn't have the VIP storyline in it because that was its own episode. And he sort of trimmed those down and put them in. And there was a reason I was checking the synopsis, and it was because I had a thought about this episode. The treatment done by Bill and Stephen Moffat back in the day when they had this whole first season planned out, you know, and there were some revelations yet to come, and there were some revelations that are frankly not going to make it to this series. There was an ongoing mystery that's just not going to happen. But I'll tell you more about it at the end of season one.
Okay, that's pretty funny.
This is the first episode in the run that doesn't have an analog in, you know, in the original episode treatments. So I thought this is more like Moffat has now, I think this has been written after they've started filming and he's met the actors and he's got more of a handle on what he wants these characters to be. Because Spike's been a bit inconsistent so far. You know, he's bullied some kids, which I didn't like, and things like that. And I think here we see the turn from the educational show that Linda wasn't that much, didn't seem to be a huge part of the storyline. Like, Spike was the main character of the series, and he had a girlfriend as well.
True.
In the original conception of it. And it's clear, and it becomes clear from season two onwards that I think pretty much the moment he got this cast together, particularly Dexter Fletcher and Julia Sawala, he just fell in love with these two and just said, I'm making it a teen romance series with some drama instead.
Yeah.
And I reckon that begins proper right here.
I would agree so. I would agree with that assertion.
Oh, right, so... No, what happens? I read what it says on the back of the... No, do I read what it says on the back of the box? No, you do it in a minute first, Governor.
I don't read the box, but I try to summarize in 60 seconds or less.
Yeah, and exactly, and I think reading the back of the DVD would be a bit of a cheat.
Yeah, so, and look, I don't have the DVD. I've found this on YouTube, which is where you can find it too, everyone.
Yep.
It's fantastic.
Episode 1.5, A Night In.
A Night In.
Series 1, Episode 5. Guy called Maneuvers uploaded it.
Yes.
Thanks, Maneuvers.
Yes, and I've saved that playlist to my favorite playlist, which is something that maybe you don't know you can do on YouTube if you have an account on YouTube. You can save playlists that other people have created, and so I just go to my playlist and hit it up. It's great.
Yep, I've done much the same. That guy has two playlists. One is all of Press Gang, and one is some pop videos from an English girl group from the 90s called Eternal.
Eternal.
Yeah, lovely stuff.
I'm not familiar. I'm going to have to look that up.
You'd be interested to know that Eternal don't exist anymore, which is quite ironic.
Indeed. Not so Eternal after all. Yeah. So, do you have your stopwatch?
I do. I've got a sort of weird googly Google stopwatch thing. Very nice. Very minimalist. Yes. I know you're not a big fan of their design, but there you go.
I find it... personally, I find a lot of the Google design misleading, meaning I think I should be, after having been in front of technology for over 20 years now, and being a technology instructor for almost as many years now, I find it very odd that I can't tell where my cursor is supposed to go to fill something in. I find that odd.
One thing, that's just me. I reckon, sorry, this is going to be slightly nerdy. One thing I reckon you will like, on this particular phone running one of the most recent Android versions, it's got the best method of inputting a time using a touch device I've ever seen. Like if you're filling in, you know, like a schedule or something.
Yeah.
Which is, it has a clock face and you press your finger against the hour and then against...
And then you rotate towards the minute?
Nope, you just press it again for the minute. So you're like... So if you have a whole circuit,
boom,
you go,
boom,
ding at the top, 12, and you go ding at the right, 12, 15, done.
Yeah, that's great. That's really
fantastic.
Good.
Fantastic.
That's really very good.
If you're worried about AM and PM, the hour has got sort of like, it's got the two versions in like tandem right next to each other. So that is neat, super fast. And however, speaking of super fast, you want to summarize this episode super fast.
Yes, I will.
Frankly, should either be very difficult or really easy. I very nearly didn't bother writing a synopsis for this. Yeah. I was just going to get into the chat.
Yeah.
Because either you write down all of the dialogue and everything that happened, or you just say, here's some stuff that happened.
Yeah.
Because it's nearly all just sort of fantastic 1-2 punch dialogue.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Right, you ready to go?
I am, sir.
All right, and you'll be going in a 3, a 2, and a 1, and go.
Night In, it's a bottle episode of sorts. So Linda likes handing out yellow sheets to people that she wants once a month to do extra evening work. And of course, it's going to be on an evening between 5 and 10 on either a Friday or a Saturday night. I forget. Spike gets handed one. He doesn't want to do it. He gives her a dead canary. and we're basically in a situation where there's they butt heads, and she threatens to have him kicked out of school if he refuses. He walks out. Sarah meets up with him and lets him know that maybe Linda's not so nice because she got dumped. What? So they have a night in with Kenny and Twiddler, and all of a sudden Colin shows up in a bunny outfit. Hilarity ensues. There's some touching moments. Spike can cook. Spike's dad was the worst. The end of the episode.
Ooh. That's 53 seconds.
Ooh, that's chump territory right there.
Well, I don't think we should completely
rip off
steal the chump concept. No. Considering we're skating on thin ice as far as that's concerned anyway.
Yes.
I'd say we got best dress, worst dress, but we did get permission
for
that one.
We got permission for that one, yes. Yeah. Ooh, that was a little short, but yeah. But like you said, you either go all in or you briefly mention things.
Precisely.
I have lots to say about this episode.
Good. Interrupt me as much as you like when I'm reading the stuff, because I think I don't have much written down, but when I get to it, I'll probably find that I've got...
I just need a reminder. Linda's ex-boyfriend's name.
James Armstrong.
James Armstrong, thank you.
Person of the year.
Yeah.
Maths genius and all-round just... I think what the Japanese would call a chojin.
A chojin?
Yeah.
Not a chojin horse of any kind?
No.
Mwah.
Because you've made the Trojan joke, yes. So I'm going to recommend the song Trojan Guitar by a band called Hot Leg, which was Justin Hawkins' band after the Darkness disbanded and before the Darkness re-spanded.
Re-spanded? I yes. love it.
Hot Leg, Trojan Guitar. It's one of the best rock songs of the last 15 years.
Nice.
In my opinion. And it's literally about an ancient battle in which people were ambushed by an army inside a giant wooden guitar.
The giant wooden guitar thing yes. makes perfect sense to me.
Anyway,
it really does. Guitar is already made of wood. Horses, not so much.
Well, apart from those aluminium guitars. Now, I've just taken the risk of moving slightly on this sofa, which won't have made any sound to you, Illyrio,
yeah.
but on recordings has been known to be louder than bombs. And so I've another reason I go mental editing is that I sometimes have to take all of that out or as much as I can.
I hear you.
There are going to be times during this episode that we're going to say the word ping. And you may recall that when that happened before, yes, we are, I did various crazy effects to it. And it's not happening this time because I don't want to go insane. And there you go. The back of the DVD says Episode 5, A Night In. I turned it to Steph for this one.
Mm-hmm.
It says, it's Saturday afternoon and Linda is handing out yellows, giving people late duty. No one wants to stay, and excuses abound. As the evening progresses, we learn why Linda is in a really foul mood, why Tiddler is writing everything down, and why Spike has a wok. And Colin, he keeps trying to get to an important meeting with the richest man in town, but oh, the obstacles, it says here. First broadcast, getting up to be my 12th birthday here, Monday 13th of February 1989. Nice. Henry Rollins' birthday, at least.
Ah.
Not his 12th birthday.
No.
You know, he's relatively clean living, as those guys go.
Mm-hmm.
So he's hung right in there. And we're on to our third director of the series, Lorne Migori.
Hmm.
Who hasn't directed a huge amount of stuff, actually. Counting this, he's done 9 episodes of Press Gang.
Hmm.
Between this one from 1989 and some in 1992.
Yeah.
And then not much else, actually, funnily enough. His IMDb page lists an 11-year gap between...
Wow, really?
Between 1972 and 1983. So there's some very very British top titles coming up. He's a credited director on Emmerdale, which at the time would have been Emmerdale Farm, a soap opera set on a farm, and then an episode of a documentary series called World in Action, which my father used to occasionally call Welding Action for his own amusement. The full phrase, I believe, was Welding Action, See the Sparks Fly. My dad was a funny guy.
Very, very puntastic.
Yeah, and I'm afraid that's where it comes from. From me. Right. I forgot to play, at least in the One Easy Lesson, I forgot to pump in the Press Gang theme tune.
You won't forget this time, I'm sure.
No, I won't, because it's going to happen now.
Wonderful tune.
I still like it.
It's really great. It's grown on me.
Yeah.
Quite immensely.
They change it for season 2.
People are full of excuses.
A lovely cavalcade of excuses.
They don't want to do it. They're too busy. Any night but today or any day but tonight.
Alfred doesn't really have an excuse. He's just not available.
Sorry. Which is interesting because if... Why does Linda let Fraz get away with that, but she's so hard on Spike?
But it might also be that Fraz is not really the guy you want putting in more work.
Ah, yes, good point.
If we're being simple there.
Linda manages people better than I do, apparently.
Well, indeed. Are you like, you have to ask because you're asking everyone, but like you know he's going to weasel out of it.
Yeah.
So it works. Yeah, Julie just promised to see her gran.
Mm-hmm.
Sarah, she claims to have a stack of homework, but she actually really does. It's not a lie from Sarah.
It's true.
She still she has a stack of homework.
She's very, very angry. Don't ruin it.
Yes.
Yeah, no, she has a legitimate concern and is upset. And then I must say that Kenny's excuse was by far my favorite, as he first tell me what excuses haven't been used yet. So he's already quite upfront. I'm just going to look for an excuse. And then it turns into, hey, my aunt is really sick.
Yeah.
If you're going to make something up, keep track of what you make up, because you're not going to say someone's sick if you already said that they had died.
Yeah, it's a that is a bit of an upgrade from her previous status. That's,
she's doing better.
Oh, she really turned it around.
Yeah, she totally did.
Her death went into remission.
Her death went into remission.
Oh, sorry. No, that may be unpleasant for some people. Very sorry.
Apologies if you're offended, but we're just trying to have a laugh here.
I don't know. What did you reckon to Danny's excuse, or didn't you catch it?
I was just kind of confused as to why he would just kind of step out. I don't remember it, even though I heard it twice. Can you mind me?
He told his mum he'd help her paint the garden.
Oh, paint the garden or something.
Or something, correct.
Yes, yes. And it was very weird. I have not painted a garden.
Well, no, you don't paint a garden.
No. I mean, you could probably paint
something like
in the garden.
Yeah, but he doesn't mean that. No. It's just like...
Unless his mum paints gardens.
Well, maybe.
Sells paintings of gardens.
Weirdly, this is only the... This is not the only joke in the episode about painting something you wouldn't normally paint.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. Danny's just poking his head out of the dark room. He can't wait to shut that door back again and disappear.
Yeah, exactly.
So we get some comedy Spike with his running foot commentary.
Oh, that's a good one, Chris.
Oh, no, I didn't even mean that as a pun.
But it's just in your genes, man.
Is he just doing that as he opens the door so people pay attention to him, or has he literally been doing that all the way?
I would think he's been doing that all the way, mostly to practice his American accent.
Well, yeah, I think...
Which, it kind of borders on Joy-Z every once in a while, right?
Yeah.
It's a weird kind of... It's like a 1940s gangster movie accent sometimes, right?
It is. See here, like that.
See here, you. What are you talking about?
Yeah, Shane, don't.
I'm Edward G. Robinson. Yeah. Chum why do they put me in this movie about the Ten Commandments? See.
What about John Wayne in the greatest story?
Oh,
Troy
yeah.
is the son of God.
Yeah.
Anyway, John sorry Wayne. About that.
Oh, it's all good. We are going to digress. The meeting of the feet was fantastic. I did not appreciate his comment about Linda's attire in the slightest.
Well, not least because he's stepping on our toes there.
He's totally stepping on our toes, bud.
But I think it's a small failing of the direction here because they don't show you what he's talking about. You don't see that skirt for ages.
No.
So she's wearing a, we'd still call it sari tartan, but a plaid shirt with a polka dot skirt. Which, okay, that's not wise. What is it? Your skirt doesn't match your blouse and it's really annoying me.
But it does point to how perhaps out of sorts Linda is.
That's true, and I think it's just that she doesn't really care much about how she looks. But, like, she still looks great as a person.
Yeah.
But there'll be some later unusual costume choices for Linda. Yeah. I can determine my own spoiler policy on this podcast, I guess.
One moment, Chris.
Yep.
You're leaving? Okay, bye. See you later. My significant other had to go to work.
Ah, indeed.
So I said goodbye.
Goodbye. However, what you do get here is a good look at the swirly, starry kind of tight legs, leggings/tights.
Mm-hmm.
Not quite sort of tights, but like... schoolgirl sort of permanent tights. I haven't got a word for these. This item of clothing.
Hmm.
But anyway, they go on the legs.
Leggings?
I suppose so. She's got a skirt over them. I think leggings is probably good enough. Mm-hmm. I don't like his own tights in this issue. Leggings is good, yeah. Do you remember what he's got on that evening?
No.
It's his kidney transplant.
Oh, yeah, but they can mail it to him.
Exactly.
Because he thinks that Linda's asking him about his availability for maybe a social rendezvous.
Yeah. I don't think he's expecting yellow. So, the yellow chit, it's...
Is this a standard thing? Is this a common thing?
Not that I'm aware of. It's something that's clearly just evolved in the press gang office.
Okay.
I call it that like they call themselves that. In the Junior Gazette
office. In the Junior Gazette office, true.
For crying out loud. Sorry. It's like making a Thunderbirds film and referring to the people who pilot the Thunderbirds as Thunderbirds. Only an idiot would do that.
Doesn't
They're
everyone
international
do that?
Rescue, you tossers.
Doesn't almost everyone do that?
They do now.
Unfortunately.
Yes.
Yeah. International Rescue, indeed. Yeah, I used to love Thunderbirds. And then they didn't play it here anymore.
What's that, David Hasselhoff? Oh, you're Knight Rider, are you? Well done.
Well, you know, we do call John McClane diehard now.
I don't. I call him John McClane.
I know, but it's more funny to call him diehard.
This is stupid.
I agree. So Press Gang tells Press Gang that he doesn't want to stay late.
Yeah, he's got some pressing ganging
to do. And all of a sudden, there is the most amazing tete-a-tete. Mm. Sarah is trying to calm down Linda. Spike is getting all hot under the collar.
Yeah.
We see Jeff. He hands Linda the phone.
The terrified looking
terrified Jeff.
He's like, what are you going to do?
Jeff, by the way, is on my list for best dress so far.
Yeah, right. He's pretty cool.
Those horizontal stripes. And everyone is staring at what's going on, except there's like one person in the background paying no attention whatsoever. Just working. I'm trying to spot who this is. But like, okay, no, they turn around. So yeah, and Spike is really, really, really pissed looking. And yes. Sarah's standing there behind Linda. And all of a sudden, Spike walks towards the mimeograph machine.
Yep. I told you I had one.
Throws a pile of paper.
Yeah.
I was very taken aback at that.
Well, he's still meant to be a bit of a tearaway at this point.
Yeah.
You know, he really softens on this episode.
he definitely does. But I was very, very taken aback. I was very surprised by that. I was not expecting that whatsoever.
But he's still got his bad boy defense walls up. And of course, Linda makes the call to Sullivan because, of course, Spike has to stay on the paper. He's out of the school.
Yep.
And so she makes that call, but she ends up calling...
The weather service.
After Spike leaves. But, crucially, it's Kenny who dialed that number.
Mm-hmm.
Linda was fully
expecting
to make
that call. No, I believe Linda dialed it, but Kenny gave her a number to dial on a piece of paper.
Right. Gotcha. Yes, you are correct. But it goes to show that she would have just made that call.
Yeah,
and got him booted out. Which is, that's quite something. You expect it to be a bluff.
Mm-hmm.
And it is one, but accidentally, at least, you know, not on her terms.
No.
Never mind.
Thank goodness for Kenny. That's all I'm going to say.
And just prior to this, we've seen Tiddler trick Sarah into giving up her yellow.
Yes. Well, it's not that Sarah was necessarily opposed to it. Sarah didn't want to give it up Linda would have... not allowed the younger kids to do that. And I thought the trick was great.
Yes.
You know, calculator borrowing was what Linda was responding to. But then later on, when we see Tiddler is there late, like Linda doesn't make, like we don't get a scene that resolves that.
No.
So we just move on, I suppose. Yeah.
But this time there was something I noticed that I've never noticed before.
Mm-hmm.
That suggests she's not that okay with it. And I'll get to that when we get there.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh. But, I forgot your canary reference earlier.
Yes.
I think I'll travel better than Budgie did the other week.
Yeah. Budgerigard.
Yeah. Never mind.
Never mind. It's not a parakeet. It's a budgie.
Right. I think that's it for this. Well, Spike leaves, and Sarah leaves afterwards because we learn that something happened yesterday.
Yeah, yesterday, wasn't it?
Yeah, wasn't it yesterday?
It was just yesterday. So there's all this yesterday talk, and something happened with Linda yesterday, and we don't know exactly what it is. Now, when you were watching this the first time, did you assume that it was love life related?
The thing is, I do have a memory of watching this episode go out, but mm-hmm. I only remember the second half.
Okay.
And I don't think I would have picked up on this, and I wouldn't have remembered James Armstrong.
No.
As being the boyfriend, or even thought of Linda as having a boyfriend.
Actually forgot that she had a boyfriend.
Yeah. Well, she was only going to see a band with him before, so clearly there's been some movement behind the scenes, not in a sexy way as far as I'm aware, that's not what I meant, but it's hard to imagine Linda having time for anything outside of that room.
I agree.
Considering when other people come back to the Yellows, like, they've changed clothes, they've been home and done that, she hasn't changed clothes.
No, she's been there the whole time.
And it is Saturday.
Yep.
So she's been there for like a working day on Saturday and is, you know, pulling people back for 5 more hours.
Yeah.
Later on. And so we cut to later on and he hasn't arrived. But I can't be bothered with that storyline right now because what the fuck is Tiddler wearing?
Hello. Here's worst dressed alert number one.
We'll get
to that when we get to that, but the best thing on her are her ping rings, her ping earrings.
Yes, right. So she's got long gold earrings with mm-hmm. pings attached.
Darn right.
But she's got those colourful plastic-coated paper clips attached to the pings.
Yep.
So even more that. And a shirt that looks like the opening titles for a Saturday morning kids show.
My goodness, yes.
It looks
You have to catch them all.
Yes. Well, it looks like some, you know, someone at a TV show just got hold of Quantel paint box. Yes, we can do all this shit now. We learned that she's saying fridge to stop herself from saying fridge.
Yep. Almost got her there.
Yeah, she's too smart for that. She's a canny one.
Why is everyone going out the indoor on this show?
That's interesting. That door is only labeled in on the outside, and that's how you go in. Mm-hmm. There is a shot later on, and it's one of the few times you see it from this angle, where you mm-hmm. see the other set of double doors that are directly next to it and lead presumably to the rooms at the front of the Gazette building.
Ah.
And there's another single door next to that, which I can only imagine is sort of a janitorial supplies or office supplies cupboard
thing.
I have no idea if the Junior Gazette use those rooms. I think it's just whatever was...
Yeah, available.
Like, I don't even know what this building was. It was the oldest looking building in a little sort of, not even a retail park, just a place where there's like maybe 4 different office buildings of mm-hmm. Relative age, of not relative age, of differing age.
Mm-hmm.
And the Gazette building, which is still standing, is clearly a sort of late 80s number. You can just tell by looking at it. And this was some kind of relic that must have been part of another complex of buildings that predated that and was just hanging in there and belonged to someone. Probably whoever owned the Gazette offices, to be honest with you, so they mm-hmm. could, you know, the production company could get both of them. It's an amazing location for the...
Oh, it's great.
For the purposes of the story, mm-hmm. they couldn't have come up with anything better than that.
That's fantastic.
Drop right into their laps. I don't even know how they found it. It's really hidden. Yeah, there you go. So I think we're meant to assume that those are other rooms that are used for things, but I will tell you now, we will never see in there. So you could be baffled and mm-hmm. mystified every time you see the front of the thing.
Yeah. So, I mean, I must say, that whole set is remarkable. It's fantastic. It's so wide open and great, and it's wonderful to have an actual location.
Yeah, this
like
this
that
is,
you can film in, and it doesn't feel shallow or hollow or any of that. It's really great.
Yeah, this at the moment is the genuine interior of the building that you see.
Yeah,
they are actually on location the whole time.
Yeah.
Later on, that building does become condemned, and they recreate it as a set. I think for season 2, and occasionally they'll have to the set is at Pinewood Film Studios, mm-hmm. and occasionally they'll have to drive people out to Uxbridge so they can go in the exterior door of the actual building and be filmed doing that, and then like, arrive on set in Pinewood in a different shot later on.
Wow. How far a drive is that?
I haven't looked it up. I'm going to look that up now. Fill some dead air.
So we're basically met with, excuse me, another Spike-Linda confrontation.
Yeah.
And this Linda-Spike confrontation leads to Spike about to leave again.
What I will point out quickly is what Spike calls Tiddler when he arrives.
Oh my gosh, I wrote it down. I could not believe.
He shouldn't call her one while using that accent.
Yeah. Hi, tits.
Oh, dear.
The first time I watched and I was like, what?
It's just like, wow, I know that the television language rules are a bit different.
I wrote it down. Hi, tits.
You don't say that to a 14-year-old girl.
You don't say that to any girl, actually.
Well, indeed.
I don't mean to be correcting you, because I know you didn't mean that.
No.
But you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Oh,
dear.
Crazy, right. Yeah. So, hi, tits was very interesting.
Actually, from Pinewood Studios to... Rockingham Road, which is, it's not the road it's on, but it's the nearest road I knew of. Mm-hmm. It's actually only 3 and a bit miles.
Okay.
So it's eight minutes in a vehicle.
That's not bad.
So it's not too bad.
It's not too bad at all, actually. Good.
So, yeah. I have no idea if anyone ever thought he just called her tits.
But, I thought that twice.
Well, I can watch this expecting it and knowing that he's going to say tids and it still sounds like tits.
Yep.
And I'm not quite putting
it still past, sounds like tits to me.
I'm not quite putting it past Dexter Fletcher to have tried to get away with it.
Yeah, because as we all know from previous episodes of ours, anyone in a kid's show is just desperately trying to get dirty jokes in.
Well, also, like, there's the... Are you familiar with the Extreme song "Get the Funk Out"?
Oh, I love that song.
Yeah, but there was a point at the end where Sharon does it fart and clearly says "fuck" at least once, deliberately on the studio version that went out to radio. And then they're like, I've heard them go, "Yeah," and then people phone in and complain, like, "Duh!" It's like, no, it's funk, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
You've done this deliberately so people think you're saying "fuck," and then you do say "fuck."
Mm-hmm.
Oh dear. I'm saying fuck quite a lot.
Fuck yeah. And as Spike is about to leave, because of course Linda and he are at each other's throats again.
Well, I've just got past the bit because I was saying that Linda didn't seem to mind that A, Tiddler has swapped for Sarah Yellow, and also isn't actually doing any of the Gazette work yet. He's just doing her English assignment, which we'll find out more about.
Which
later.
I thought she was lying about that because she didn't want anyone to know that she was doing Sarah's work, but that makes no sense because she's like the only one there and Sarah's not there, so I actually didn't understand why she was hiding her work at all, but then we find out why. But go ahead.
Because I was thinking it's homework, she can do it at home, but actually she's just come so she can observe Spike and Linda more and write more stuff down.
And if we could rewind just for a bit, when Spike comes in and he's full of really bad jokes, I was a little surprised. Yeah, I told you it was a true story. I didn't say it was interesting. I was a little bit surprised at how impressed Tiddler was by Spike. But then I realized, but she's younger and he's older and he's an attractive boy.
Yeah, and he's
crazy.
And he's an American, which in this country is often, that's a bit cool.
Yeah. You know? I guess it's like Australians here.
I suppose so. Are they are they thought of as cool?
Yeah.
Is that why Yahoo Serious was important for a bit?
let's not go there.
Paul Hogan. Shrimp on the Barbie.
No.
Klaus Barbie. No. Whoa. Sorry.
I just remember when I was here at university, one of my classmates was Australian and he had no shortage of people to talk to. Of the opposite sex.
I bet he wasn't really Australian. I think it was a big fib.
He was really Australian.
All right, then.
He was from Perth.
Perth? I don't know. There's a Perth in Wales. He could have been Welsh.
Oh, boy.
Oh, nice. I don't think I've heard a Canadian do a Welsh accent before.
One of my volunteer parents at the kids' school is from Wales.
Oh, beautiful.
And I was like, oh, you're Welsh. Oh, boy. Oh. And she's like, that was very good. I'm like, oh, thank you for not being offended and punching me.
Yeah, I think you couldn't do it all the time.
No, I don't do it all the time.
Oh, good heavens.
Oh, good heavens. yeah. I resisted giving her a Tom Jones CD.
Yeah, nice.
Because I realized that she has one.
Well, because she's Welsh. Them's the rules.
Just like all of us here, when we're born,
yeah,
we're given a Rush CD.
I was thinking, who are you going to mention? It's going to be Rush, isn't it?
It's either Rush or Gordon Lightfoot, buddy.
Modern day worry over me. Sorry. That would have been high-pitched there. Never mind.
Wine.
Listen, I've gone right past the bit that suggests it's the only bit in the episode that suggests Linda is annoyed that Tiddler is there. And I've never caught it before now, so I'm really enjoying this watch through.
Mm-hmm.
Spike asks why she's there. She says, I got Sarah's yellow. He says, I heard they can cure that now. And Linda in the background, you don't even hear the full thing because they start talking over, says, I certainly intend to.
Whoa! I did not hear that at all.
No, it's there, trust me.
Yes, it is there, isn't it? I'm remembering now. That's pretty awesome.
At this point, we get a better look at Tiddler's outfit, and I counted the colours in that sucker.
Oh, man.
You ready? I saw a yellow, a red, some pink on one of the rolled-up sleeves, two shades of purple, one is sort of mauve, or I've heard it pronounced mauve in places, and at least three greens. Ooh. It's amazing.
Yes.
Also, a few episodes ago, you noted one of Kenny's shirts had a pocket that was the same material as the other stuff, but going horizontally. Now, Spike's got that going on with two pockets, but they're at a 45-degree angle to the rest of the shirt.
Why do people hate me so much?
Is this not a common thing elsewhere?
It might be common. It's a pet peeve of mine.
I find it
dissonant. Visually dissonant. Visual dissonance, if that's such a thing. I don't know. It's distracting to me. That's all.
No problem. We've already heard about Crazy Eddie.
Crazy Eddie.
I don't know why they call me Crazy Eddie. My name's Bob. Boom, boom. There's a lot of this episode is just jokes.
Yeah.
From this point
which
on.
Which is interesting.
Fantastic.
Right? Yeah. Because you'd figure that they'd get to the crux of the matter. You know, the actual plot. But the plot's been around since the very beginning. Linda's pissed.
Yeah.
That's the plot. And then the subplot is about to walk in through the door. Really.
We're at the point where it doesn't matter because all I've written for the following stuff is the Spike and Linda flirtathon begins.
Oh my goodness gracious.
And that's the thorn with this kind of episode. You either just write that or you write everything they've said.
Yeah.
Because just barbs.
Yeah.
Like, you know, your eyes have met, you've got a squint. Mm-hmm. No, it must be me. You know, if I had a squint, it would improve your looks, all of that.
On and on.
Yeah. Dynamite stuff, though.
Aggression as a substitute for, hey, I think you're really, really attractive and I'm really insecure about how I feel about you.
We're in like the first 15 minutes of a very long form rom-com.
Yep. Agreed.
It's clearly, I clearly don't mind saying that because it's very obvious at this point. And I think it's the most obvious now, ever since the pilot when Spike came in and was sort of lolling around and offering to drink Linda's bathwater and slay a dragon for
her. I'm glad that you mentioned the bathwater thing again. I remember a song. I forget who it's by. I believe they're from your side of the ocean because they had accents. And I believe the song goes, and if I wash my hands in your dirty water. Does that ring a bell?
Not offhand, no. Hmm. But I'll look it up. And if I can find it, it will go at the end of the episode.
Nice.
Otherwise, I'll look for something else. So anyway, he tells her she's so uptight, her feet don't reach the ground. And she looks down to check.
And then he actually says, made you look.
Yep.
That's a classic, everyone. Everyone, that's a classic. In case you weren't aware.
Yeah. How to be a douchebag.
Yeah.
He's quite a nice douchebag, Spike. He's an interesting... sod. Anyway, yes, we learn more about...
Oh,
yesterday.
Dear God, it's Rockenhide.
Rockenhide, you say?
Are you familiar with Rockenhide?
Nope.
Are you familiar with famed Metallica producer Bob Rock?
Yes.
He was in a band called Rockenhide.
Well, with Cole Hyde from Underworld.
Hang
on. I'm going to say probably not.
California Rock Roll, but the Stendhals. No.
Oh, so you've been looking up this Dirty Water song while I've been talking.
Where's the Rockenhide song?
Well, while you're doing this, I'm going to make more sofa noise. Enjoy this, everyone. I'll play the guitar. I don't think I've played the guitar on this podcast. Yeah.
Really? Sorry, I just had to look it up. Rockenhide, Paul Hyde and Bob Rock.
Okay, I don't know who Paul Hyde is. I'm guessing he's the Hyde in Rockenhide.
Yeah.
It's a self-fulfilling prophecy. What am I talking about?
British-born Canadian musician and record producer.
I hope he is actually called Bob Rock, by the way. There's some great Bobs out there. Bob Rock, there's a Bob Stone, there's Bob Mould.
Mould?
Yeah, of Sugar. And he's a noted sort of chap in his own idiom. I don't know. In his own world. Bob Mould.
Robert Jens Rock.
Oh, excellent. He is called Bob Rock. Fantastic.
Yeah, he was in the Paolas and Rockenhide.
Nice.
Yeah.
That'll do it.
There we are.
I'm going to get back to press gang.
Sorry. Sorry, Chris. I apologize.
I just
got totally sidetracked on...
No, it's okay because we finally get a bit more of the revelation as to what happened yesterday. We've already discussed
it.
It's Linda's boyfriend making history.
And Kenny still doesn't understand.
No. I didn't understand at this point. It really needed pointing out to me. So you got it at this point. You're like, oh, right, she's been dumped and is really, really annoyed about it.
Yeah, it's something else. And then they get upset at each other again.
Mm.
Spike's going to walk out again. But
this is one of those interesting moments that when you watch it after you've seen the episode and you know what's happened. You realize that if he leaves now, he leaves all of his bags that he brought. So he leaves all of his cooking supplies and some raw, unrefrigerated meat. Like, until at least Monday.
Yep. Salmonella, anyone?
Yeah. But you were about to say a thing, and it might be what I was about to say, but I'll
I think
to you.
In walks Colin.
Yes. He's prevented from leaving by Colin the Bunny.
Yeah.
Who has a ping for a nose.
A ping for a nose.
And some sort of pipe cleaners.
Absolutely.
Now
I must say, at this point in the episode, I was relieved. Because I felt like the episode was getting a little heavy.
Right.
And I was looking forward to it it moving along a little bit.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, we get completely derailed into the insanity that is Colin in a pink bunny outfit.
Yes. A pink bunny outfit that he is completely unaware that he's wearing. Which is
That
puts it over the top.
Made this episode, quite frankly, better than I could have hoped.
Yes.
The fact that he is completely unaware that he has forgotten to take off the bunny outfit is fantastic.
He's got a lot on his mind. He's you know, he's a young chap, and he talked some advertising with a business magnate, a guy called Warner Edison.
Warner Edison, indeed.
And he's been invited to, like, his house for, just for a meeting, and it's an amazing networking opportunity for him. It turns out that the guy's very straight. He's got no sense of humour. So Colin, who relies on a joke here or there, he's as nervous as anything, and he hardly knows what he's doing. But does it show?
I don't know.
It's kind of hard to pin down exactly.
Oh, and what I love is how nobody tells him straight away.
No. How do you respond to this? Also, he barely stops.
Yeah.
And then when he asks the question, which is like, does it show? I think you at that point you'd want to string him along a bit.
Just a tiny bit, I would agree.
Yeah, so it turns out Colin's got a younger sister and it's her birthday. And his mum's made him dress as a giant rabbit to entertain her and presumably her friends.
Mm-hmm.
I reckon he billed his mother for that. I reckon he hasn't done that for free because this is Colin.
This is Colin. How have you ever entertained young children at a party?
No.
I've had young kids over here for parties. I don't really entertain them. I kind of just let them go and play and do their thing. I mean, we've had games and things at birthday parties, like pin the lightsaber on Darth Vader.
Nice.
Which was excellent. I got to do some printing of a high-resolution picture of Darth Vader, intellectual property of Disney. Fair use, of course. And I had to Photoshop out the lightsaber.
And
I did some tile printing, some large format printing, and then we put tape on it so if it rained, it would be okay. And it was just a lot of fun. People had a lot of fun trying to put cardboard lightsabers on Darth Vader. It was better than pin the tail on the donkey.
I don't know how.
Oh, no. There are many dads that are better than I am. Thank you, though. I appreciate it. But I will say this. If someone gave me an outfit of some kind to put on, how in the world am I supposed to entertain kids being dressed as some kind of animal? I don't understand how that works. Do you go around to each of them and make an animal sound? Do you hop around and try to just be funny? I don't get it. But that's just me, I suppose.
Colin does have some performance sidelines that we learn about later. So he may have been doing maybe some magic tricks or something. But I think you'd want your fingers more readily accessible for that.
Oh, did he pull himself out of his own hat?
That would be amazing.
That would be fantastic.
It'd be the opposite of that effect that Cassie Newton did in yesterday's Buffy.
Yesterday's Buffy. That's true. And by yesterday, we mean we recorded an episode of Potential Cast talking about conversations with dead people.
Yeah, in which someone turns themselves inside out from their mouth outwards, which is still
pretty
great.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, I don't want to talk about that 10 out of 10 best episode ever.
Mm-hmm.
I'll talk about this because I've done that bit now. Sorry, I love conversations with dead people. You may have noticed.
Colin is so oblivious. I love it. I love every single second of Colin in the bunny outfit. And then when he realizes and then when he's told he's wearing the bunny outfit.
Paul Reynolds is really good at this as well because when you watch him move, he tries to make sure he doesn't get any sort of bit of himself in his own eye line. Mm-hmm. That would give it away.
Yeah.
So when he goes over and leans on Kenny's shoulder and things like that, he's well worth watching. He's a very underrated actor. He's very impressive. And then, of course, Linda pulls the ears down into his eye line. And he changes his tune. Spike suggests he goes home and change, which is a great idea.
That's a wonderful idea.
Yeah, everyone will be out, but his house keys are in his jacket pocket.
Yep.
He doesn't get that far before he realizes he's not wearing
his jacket.
Yeah.
But then Linda convinces him that if he runs, maybe they won't have been gone yet.
Yeah.
And then we get to my favorite toilet in the world.
Ah, the unisex toilet with the
unisex toilet with the little label that just you flip over.
Yeah. I'm not sure that would be workable.
No.
Because it's not... I mean, I don't think you know this at this point. It's not just like a one-person toilet. It's a big enough room. It's got a few cubicles.
Oh, is it?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
So you could go in and just sort of... I mean, to be honest, I think unisex toilets are fine.
Yeah, they're fine.
You know, but if you add this extra confusion of the gendered door, you could go in, you don't know who's in there. You might then like shock some people. It's just a joke, Chris. Lighten up, you twat. Sorry, I went a bit strange there.
No worries. I love how Spike brought an apron.
Yes.
And did he bring his own hot plate, or did they use a hot plate that they had there?
I think he brought all of that stuff, because they wouldn't have that there. They go to the fish and chip shop.
That's true. Oh, Tiddler. Oh, what are you wearing, child?
This is shortly after we finally absolutely have it spelled out that... Anderson's broken up with Linda, except she refutes this
Of course not, because he's just doing a project on Venn diagrams.
Yeah, she sounds foreign.
Yep.
He's doing a thing on Venn diagrams. Yeah, no, well, we learned he was a maths student before. He's studying maths at college, and he needs a lot of time not having a relationship with Linda.
Yeah, agreed.
Because also, wouldn't you go insane with a relationship with Linda?
I don't know. I think if you're the right personality type, I think Linda's the ideal person.
Hmm.
Right? If you're anything like Linda, she's not the ideal person for you.
Oh, terrifying.
You know? So, we'll see. Spike slouches a lot. I don't like it.
Yeah, he'll be
and
fine.
We get to the jokes about how his dad only cooks beans because it's the only food he can enjoy twice.
Nice. He describes his dad like they're one of the giant roadie guys from Beavis and Butthead Do America.
Yeah.
Or like some kind of Deep South trucker or something. I don't know if you do buy this conception of Spike's dad.
I don't know. I'm not very sure. I don't know what Spike's dad would be doing in England if he was t-shirt and farting around and eating only beans type. I think that's something Spike is putting on. My assumption is that Spike's dad is an important businessman of some kind or a diplomat. And that he doesn't get to spend a lot of time with Spike, and Spike is basically left to fend for himself. And so instead of telling people what his dad is really like, he just tells people that his dad is a bum.
Yeah, that seems reasonable. And obviously, I know more about the series, mm-hmm. but it doesn't really ring true at this point, I've got to say.
Yeah,
because the idea of this sort of just slouch layabout somehow ending up, you know, in a London suburb.
Yeah.
Is really odd.
Very, very odd. Yes. Agreed.
So there you go. Unless, of course, it has something to do with the absent mother.
Mm-hmm.
Who
leaves all the time and is left every year, many times a year. And
yep,
Spike's first
word was leaving.
Leave. Thought her name was Leave.
Yeah, he thought his parents were dad and leaving.
Dad and leaving. Hmm. Bit of a sob story.
Bit of such.
But he presents it as something he's all calloused about.
Yeah.
I find Linda's insight very, very important.
Yep, absolutely.
It's just a way of hiding your feelings. Very keen, Linda. Very keen.
But it does, it adds an extra sting when you watch the first episode of Press Gang, when Spike claims not to remember his name. And Linda says, "I ask your mother to write it in your notebook every morning," or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, when I watch that now, I go, "Oh, you're accidentally being insensitive."
Which, yeah,
you don't. So you aren't being insensitive, because to be insensitive, you have to do it on purpose. But you know what I mean.
Yep, totally get you.
There you go. And we finally find out why Tiddler has tagged along to this late session.
It is quite... could you call this plagiarizing from reality?
Oh, yeah, sure.
I love it.
We don't know quite what she's writing. We only know that... So, yeah, it's her English assignment. It says about at least three interesting people she knows, but she could only think of Spike and Linda. And she says this to Kenny.
I know.
He does glare a bit.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
You know... But he's a nice enough guy that I think he wouldn't let that bother him for too long. Also, I think Kenny knows he's a bit dull.
Yeah, I think so too.
Anyway, Linda goes back to her desk to snap some pencils.
That is something. I've never snapped pencils
out
of aggression or anger or anything. I find it extraordinarily wasteful.
Yeah, it's fine.
Those things aren't cheap.
We barely use pencils over here, man. We're pen crazy.
Pen crazy.
In the UK. Right. I don't know about in Canada. I'm always astonished by how frequently pencils are used in America to like write like treatment scripts and things like that.
Oh, that's ridiculous. I mean, people say, I'm a pen person.
I got a legal pad and a pencil. And why are you writing in pencil? That's weird.
I mean, there are pencils all over the house because when the kids write stuff and they want to be able to erase it.
Yeah.
You know, it's important. And so I have, like, pencils on my desk. And so I wrote all my notes in pencil the last couple days. But that's just because that's what was here. And my favorite pen is in my bag, which I don't want to go upstairs and get.
Fair enough.
So I'll just use my pencil. Recently, was my 40th birthday, and I got that amazing gift from my mother-in-law.
We recorded on your birthday, by the way.
Yeah, we did. Birthday. It was fantastic. Oh, thank you. My mother-in-law gave me a gift. It is a pen that on the bit where the cap would be is a stylus or a screen, a digital device. And on the other end, where you would have a pen, there is a black pen, a red pen, and a lead pencil.
Oh,
that you can make pop out based on how many times you spin the spinny thing. It is fantastic.
That is a multifunctional writing gadget.
It is wonderful. I love it.
Good work. It's now great. Use it. Now use it as a planchette to speak to the dead. Conversations with
maybe.
Dead people.
Maybe. Maybe I will. Maybe.
Sorry, I don't know where that goes.
Now is that Suzanne Planchette?
Yes. Yes, it is. It's just the word planchette landed in my head, and I thought, I've got to say this.
So, Colin returns.
Yes, he does. We're skipping the bit with the pillow.
Oh, the pillow! Yes, please! A Tiddler uses a pillow so she can reach her typewriter.
Yeah, Spike suggests that Linda beat it up and imagine it's James Armstrong. She has no desire to do that, even if it does look a bit like him.
Yep.
Which is great.
That's awesome.
And has about as much backbone. Aww. But yeah, before we can get too heavy, again, Colin returns.
Colin!
He's had a bit of an adventure.
So, I'm trying to get in to my house without my keys through my bathroom window, and the police show up.
Yeah, you probably don't leg it. You probably explain what's happening.
I probably say, hi, this is my house, and I have an important meeting, and I need to change, and my family's gone, and I can't reach them because cell phones aren't a thing yet.
Yeah.
Can you please open the door for me?
Well, they won't open the door for you, but they'll at least probably not arrest you.
Yeah, please don't arrest me. Can you please take pity on me? I don't know. Or maybe he's known to the police.
Well, there is that. But
oi! But that you're the one that sold us those pings! Come back, you.
There's pings all over the station.
All over the back of the squad car.
They used as replacement lights. You colour one ping in
these
red.
These don't work.
One ping in blue.
Blue.
Put a couple of LEDs underneath.
A couple of what?
LEDs.
A couple of what? 1989, man.
I know. Even as I said it, I knew, but we had light emitting diodes in 1989.
Yeah, but they were all red.
Yes, they were. They were the shit calculators that you didn't want. You wanted LCD.
Darn right. And poor Colin. He's all disheveled. The bunnies. He's not getting the security deposit back on that bunny suit.
Let me
tell you right now.
So Colin ran from the police because he understands the rules of farce, which is also why he hasn't just cut himself out of that thing using some of the scissors that they will clearly have around an office where they make a newspaper. Also, he offers advice, which is not smoke weed every day.
Smoke weed every day.
Smoke weed every day.
Hey.
But his advice is never thumb a lift dressed as a giant pink rabbit.
Yep.
He nearly caused a major traffic disaster.
Yeah.
Also, it took him ages to evade the police because he thinks they got his description. Great. But he understands farce, which
just
is why
fantastic.
He behaves in a certain way.
Colin is just fantastic in this.
Splendid
character. I love it. Love it, love it, love it.
Moffat had two characters that he most enjoyed writing for.
Mm-hmm.
I think the fact Colin is one of them is a bit of a giveaway, considering I mention it right now.
Yeah.
Linda was the other one, which is why she got all the best lines, is what he says in one of the commentaries. But he enjoyed writing Colin because you could... Press Gang exists in about as real a world as you can get, except for Colin, who bends the rules of that world like nobody's business, and you could do really mad crap with a character like that in a show that takes itself pretty seriously otherwise.
Yeah, well, except for the fact that they're about to swap clothing, and then the zipper is stuck.
Yes.
And then he sits down in front of a giant bottle of oil.
Well, there's also Spike's like, hey girls, would you mind? I'm about
would
to
you
strip
mind?
Off. We're not looking.
Would you mind?
Hooray.
I did not expect that at all. That was wonderful.
Class.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then Kenny uses reverse psychiatry.
He does. So you won't have to put Colin in the wok. He does. Thing is, It is a bit... It's great reverse psychology,
yeah.
But it's a stupid fucking idea.
Oh, yeah.
Regardless of what we learn later,
yes.
Just sending him off in this disheveled, filthy, ripped bunny suit...
It's amazing how instantaneously he goes from desperation to calling with confidence once more.
Oh yeah, and it's totally in keeping with the characters. Oh, you weren't fooled by my little scheme, were you? We're like, no, I think if Kenny's being sensible, he should be scissoring that bastard out of the fucking suit by now. But no one is that intelligent in this episode.
No.
At least. But he's clever enough to trick Colin into going with the... with really quite the biggest bound of confidence you ever seen from someone in a destroyed bunny outfit.
Agreed.
So, yeah. So he's off and dinner is served.
Hey!
And we get the dinner. We get the second paint joke. My food always looks great. You know what my secret is? Paint.
I forgot about that.
And dinner,
because I was mesmerized by Linda's failure at using chopsticks.
This is the thing that I have the strong memory of my first viewing of. If these box sets had never come out and I'd never seen the series again since 1989, I would always be able to, maybe not word perfectly, but tell you the big line from the end of this, which is, "You're the only person I've ever met who eats dinner to win."
Yeah,
I would remember that line because I always have. Because dinner is just a long, long power play with some chopsticks and some suspect music.
Yeah, and lots of staring. Oh yes, the pan flute of cultural insensitivity.
Yeah, see, they've even got a fucking gong.
Bong. Yeah. By the way, that dinner looks really good.
It does look good, doesn't it? I mean, it was made. Nearly 30 years ago. It's probably not so good now, but
no.
Boom.
But Tiddler's getting all sorts of material. And holy crap, Linda's a messy eater.
Yeah, the goo all over her face and things. Well, the thing, she will not accept any help, any chopstick advice. Everyone's fine except her.
Yeah.
She makes a mess, flings it all over Kenny.
By the way, I must say, it's unfair that Spike gets his own kind of nice set of chopsticks and everybody else gets those generic restaurant ones.
But, like, he may only have the one set for himself at home.
I suppose.
You know, he's a bit of a dab hand with them, but he makes the mistake of the hare and the tortoise, which is when the food turns into a competition, he gets ahead and leaves one bit of meat on his plate to Linda's four bits of meat. And then she changes the rules.
She totally changes the rules.
And shish kebabs, four chunks of chicken, and stuff them straight in a gob.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I remember most about the 1989 first transmission of this. Brilliant.
Oh, Colin's back after Linda goes to sob in the bathroom, supposedly. Yep.
She accepts that she was dumped. She doesn't cry. Her eyes were just sweating.
Sweaty eyes.
Colin returns. Yeah, and he tells the story.
Oh my god. This to me, once again, I am surprised, I'm amazed, and I am enamored with this part of the story. Colin makes it there.
Yeah.
Ed busts in.
Yes.
And says, "I'm a Bunny Graham."
"Hi, Warner, I'm a Bunny Graham."
But it's Warner's funeral, it's his wake.
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
He last spoke to the guy kind of a week ago, and he died possibly the day after or just after he spoke to Colin.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, he arrives at Warner's wake.
I have a question.
In a destroyed bunny outfit. Yes.
I have a question. Here's my question. What was the person's name again? Warren?
Warner Edison.
Warner Edison dies. He's one of the richest men in town. Colin works at the junior newspaper.
Yep.
And no one notes that this kind of a rich person is dead?
No, they don't.
Okay. That's fine for me. That's fine.
It's a problem, I gotta admit. Colin is probably just busy with other stuff.
Yep.
But yeah, whatever the thing, he hasn't heard this happen. The guy might be a bit reclusive, but still.
Mm-hmm.
And also, it's grown-up news. It might be a bit...
That's true.
A bit.
Oh yeah, you wouldn't put them. Deaths in the Junior Gazette, really.
I don't know. There is. We learn later on there is an. Well, either there is an obituaries column or it's used as a joke in a in a later episode.
Okay, I see.
But there you go. But yeah, it seems an unusual thing for us, a Charles newspaper to cover. But who knows? Anyway, he can't go and whimper in the bathroom because they've already got one in there. So he
get under the desk, Colin.
Yeah, he just whimpers under a desk instead, which he's perfectly happy to do. And,
and then we get to Spike trying to comfort Linda, and it didn't go the way I would have predicted.
No,
it isn't. You know, don't worry about it. You're fantastic. You don't need that guy. And to tell you the truth, I think you're great. It's not that.
No.
It's okay if you're in there crying. It's okay to be human. You can't keep this up forever.
Yeah, don't, you know.
Yeah.
Because it's a kid's show. And it's telling them not, you know, don't push your emotions down and ignore them. Because you can't. And it's, except... Obviously, Linda does do exactly that.
Yep.
But it is presented as not the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
Spike gives you a bit more dark shit about his home life.
Yeah. Like, oh, yeah. My dad thinks an apology is something your wife says if you hit her enough.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Like, even if that's true or not, it's a hell of a thing to say on a program designed for sort of 12 to 15-year-olds.
Yeah, I would agree.
Amazing.
Maybe because it came with an American accent, people were, I don't know, it's weird. Don't say things like that. Ugh. I mean, that was really kind of, I mean, that put me off.
I getcha. We will never know what this series would have been like if they'd just let Dexter keep his normal voice. Because we've discussed before, it was only done because the American producer said, hey, make a character American. We can sell it over there. And they did that and it never happened. So
he was never happened.
Saddled with this accent. I think they could have played it that he softened it over the years because we've already established that the character himself has lived here for long enough now that he's kind of impersonating an American accent himself. He wouldn't naturally speak that way unless he were trying to.
Exactly.
And that is my justification, I say, pointing at my recorder and thus the audience. But yeah, Linda comes out as though nothing has happened at all.
It's like incredible.
Like she was never dumped and like they never had the power play meal.
Nope.
Fantastic. Just wiped clean.
Yeah. I'm going to put that in this little part of my soul and close it up.
Yeah.
Here's the combination. Throw out the key and never mention it again. That's not very healthy, Linda.
Yeah. And she's not even fazed by a crying bunny under a desk.
Oh my goodness.
Back to work. End of
episode. Back to work, everyone. Yeah. Done. Very abrupt end. I was not expecting it to end there.
Yeah.
But very, very good. Yes.
What do you reckon to the end titles narration?
I frankly can't remember it now.
It's Julie. Julie tells Sarah about her terrifying encounter with a giant pig talking rabbit that knows her name. But he couldn't stop because he was late for a very important date.
Of course. I don't know why I couldn't remember that. Weird. I like those bits too.
There you go. And like, at this point you go, hang on, did Moffat come up with the very important date joke first and then work backwards? Because that would be insane. Or is it just that he went, hang on, I can lift this and it works?
Yeah.
I don't think that is more likely, but we'll never know.
We will never know.
Right.
Unless someone asks him next time they see him at Comic-Con.
I wonder if we could get him on. Like, I think he would talk to people about Press Gang. He'd probably get besieged by.
Well, that would be lovely.
I'd love to talk. I don't want to talk to Doctor Who.
Talk to us about Press Gang. And did you please tell us the origin of the Colin and the Bunny thing?
We
suspect that you worked your way back from that one joke in the final. That would be fantastic.
Yeah,
if that were true,
unlikely to encounter.
Regardless, but that would be really, really funny.
That would be funny.
If that is actually how he did that.
We should make a list of things we would ask.
Yeah. I'll send off a tweet to Sue Virtue. I'll see what she says.
That's true.
I'll ask her to pass it on.
Nice. I have been quite near him, but he passed by me. And he had sort of a bodyguard on him at the time. It was at the...
really?
It was a sort of official Doctor Who convention thing in Wales that I reviewed for Cult Box.
Oh, nice.
And, you know, and I saw him do a few sort of presentation things. I don't count that as being that near him.
No, no, no.
But then, like, he walked past me at the bar, you know, to go to, probably to the bathroom or something, but he had mm-hmm. a guy with him, so he presumably didn't get mobbed by tossers yeah. like me. Except not like me, except because I would, you know, I just let him go about his business.
Yeah, which is what you want to do. I mean, you don't want to accost someone.
No.
It's one of the reasons why at conventions Nathan Fillion hands out little cards.
Oh, yeah, very good.
Which say something to the effect of, I'm extraordinarily busy at these things. I would love to stand and take a picture with you and say hi to you. I would appreciate it if you just understood that right now is a really, really bad time for this, but I really appreciate you recognizing me and saying hi to me.
Well, I suppose that it's
which
the,
is kind of an interesting thing to do.
It's probably kind of the most thing you can do. Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. Right. Do you want to hit up some feedback, Governor?
Yes.
We have one email. We have two voicemails. What I like about this is that we've got a guy that I've brought in from some podcasting I've done, a uh-huh. guy you've brought in from some podcasting you've done, and then one in the middle who's kind of sort of encountered us both in different places and is uh-huh. Here as well. It's good.
I will read Brandon's email.
Wicked! This will be the first time you've read Brandon's email. He's got a great email signature.
Nice. Brandon writes, a couple of quick notes. First, when Spike first greets Tiddler, does it sound to anyone else like he calls her tits instead of tids? Yes, Brandon, it totally does.
I'm hoping that everyone's going to mention this now.
I hope they quit using that shortening of her nickname. Second, I'm not very clear why they're all here. I know Linda calls it late duty. I'm just not sure what late duty is.
The thing is, there's work to be done, but we never see it because the work is not important to the plot. They're exactly. about to actually start that when the episode ends.
When the episode ends, I know. One last thing. I don't think I've seen more semi-sexual tension in watching two people eat.
Whoa.
Signed by authority and permission of the superiors.
It's a great sign off. Thanks, Brandon.
Very good, Brandon. Thank you.
You know, you may know Brandon from some of my phones. He on EH Podcast, he's known as Rook.
Rook!
Yes.
And Rook!
And Joe and Chris do a thing. He's known as Brandon. He's going to be known as Brandon here
That's
as
great.
Well. Right.
All right. I'm queuing up Matt's voicemail.
And I am also doing that.
Linda, you are a crazy person, and I love you, but I think Spike is right. If you don't stop making everything a competition and learn to simmer down, you are going to end up either on a psychiatrist's simmer. Couch or just having a nervous breakdown that gets you sent to the sanitarium. The madhouse.
Sanatarium!
I see both nice. You and Colin lining up to get your meds and then playing many a board game and assembling many a puzzles.
We're the
ableist
podcast.
Because you refuse to admit that you don't know how to use chopsticks, and he runs around town wearing a bunny suit. And it's okay that you don't know how to use chopsticks. White people who use chopsticks are just pretentious. You're English. You're super white. Just own it. Use a fork. Did Spike call Tiddler tits? He's like, hey, tits, I like your outfit. He's wrong. It's garbage. She should kill herself. And then Whoa. Later, Spike told a domestic violence joke, which I found very off-putting. Yeah. Yeah. This show is so weird. The characters are kids, but they act like mini adults. It's fantastic. I can't even tell you how happy I am that I'm watching this program and listening to your podcast.
Yay!
Knuckle Draggers, you're doing an awesome job.
Right.
Oh, I can't wait for the next episode. And if I say ping, does Chris have to put in the sound effect?
No.
Pinocchio. No. Ha. Tricked you.
Thanks, Matt.
That was a strange sign-off, Matt. Thank you.
That was. I don't know. I don't know if you can make jokes about domestic violence jokes being off-putting whilst also claiming a 14-year-old girl should kill herself because of the jacket she's wearing, Matt. But hey, that's just me.
Well, you know. Yeah. Maybe that is just you. No, I, yeah... The domestic violence thing was not funny. It was very strange, but I think I think that's Spike characterizing his father as a horrible person.
Yeah, I don't think you're necessarily meant to laugh at that. I just
no.
If I'm honest with you, I think they're just feeling out the Spike character. Like at this point, that could easily be true, and maybe later they change their mind. You know.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. Hey, Paul Mackey sent us a voicemail.
Hooray. I'm sure I was going to say something else about Matt A's one, but never mind. No, we don't need to do the pings.
Nope, and, no more pings.
And he mentioned the tits.
Again. Tits.
I don't think we're ever going to say tits again.
Tits?
On the podcast.
Tits are great. If you like tits.
Hmm. Julia Sawala is actually less white than some of the other...
I know.
Some of the other cast members.
But, you know.
But, yeah.
Yeah. Linda's quite white, isn't she?
I suppose it's the distinction between Linda Day and Julia Sawala.
Mm-hmm.
But, yes. Right. I nearly said something about season two.
Oh, goodness gracious.
Right. Okay, can you count me off a Paul Mackey guy?
Yes. Okay. 3, 2, 1, play.
All right, this is a quick and dirty Elk River Kitchen.
Quick and dirty.
Voicemail. Kitchen. Okay, first up, with Spike's accent, it really should not be acceptable to call her tids. It certainly didn't sound like tids. Was what he called her.
100%.
I understand it wasn't Dexter's first choice to do Spike with the accent, but given the nature of the budding relationship with Linda, I have to think a little modeling of it was off of David Addison. He could be shooting for Bruce Willis now.
Mm-hmm.
I think I might have said something about the moonlightingness previously, but I'm not going to stop now. I'd never call Colin the Screech of Press Gang, but the setup of the bunny suit situation was really Screech-like.
Really?
And if it had been limited to having forgotten he was wearing it, it would be a Saved by the Bell level gag. But it was truly inspired, the levels it went to afterward.
Wrong
posing as a singing telegram and it being the guy's wake was far better than I expected from what was otherwise apparently a simple gag. That's really all I have time for this time, but I'll be watching along and I should probably attempt to offer schedule detail for a guest shot with you at some point. This has been Paul Mackey. In my kitchen, late at night, in Elk River, Minnesota, and I'll talk to you later.
Minnesota. Bye. Thank you, Paul.
Minnesota.
That'd be great. We you know, it's hard for us to arrange guests, and it would be nice to have some more.
We shall see what we can do about that. Thank you for feedback, everyone.
He mentioned a thing that I was going to refer to again, and it's already left my mind because that's I've had a lot on the last few days. And I can't.
Was it tits?
It wasn't tits.
All right. Sorry, that's all I can offer.
We are extremely unlikely to ever say tits on this podcast ever again after this episode. So,
that's right, tits. Chris.
Unless Spike insists on continuing to call her tids.
Yes.
In which case, we may get the opportunity to say tits again.
All righty. I'm going to finish saying tits right now.
Go on then.
I'm going to say fridge from now on.
Very good.
I don't want to say tits. Darn it! Cut me. I'm not smart like Tipper. Fridge is.
Yeah.
I'm ready to rate this. Are you ready to rate this?
Well, you can do, but we've also... Do you want to do the rating before the besting and the worsting of Dresting?
According to my outline that we had figured out originally, it was rated best worst feedback last word. So it doesn't matter to me. I'm okay. I was just... Cool. Going by rated then best worst, but do you want to do best worst first?
Oh, I don't care. No, let's rate it. I love it. Okay. Oh, I think it's great.
I'm giving this 5 out of 5.
This is my first 5 as well.
This is a 5 out of 5 ping noses. Like this was fantastic, fantastic. It was kind of iffy for a little bit, but then all of a sudden it exploded in all kinds of ways. It was great.
Yeah, it's not up to much plot-wise, but it is not. No. It's not about plot. It's
not about plot at all. It's about characters, yeah.
Specifically, Spike and Lindo. This is why I assume that this is Moffat writing after the casting has happened and he's seen them in action. Mm-hmm. Because this is there's nothing like this in the original series treatment and episodes. Nothing like this episode at all.
Yeah.
Whether the producers said, hey... We're running out of money. Can you write a cheap one? We don't know. We'll probably never know. I wouldn't put it past him to just do this.
Yeah. Agreed.
As a way of exploring those characters. Because, you know, sometimes a writer will do that. Some of the best Russell T. Davis stuff is when he will just stop and put two people in a cafe or restaurant and talk. There's two bits in Doctor Who where that happens.
Yeah.
It's great. And he had a recent series on Channel 4 here called Cucumber, and that ends with a conversation in a restaurant as well, in a coffee shop, which is splendid. And there's another one with three people in a car during a heavy rainstorm having a conversation as well. Best parts of the series. Amazing.
Excellent.
Very good stuff. I love it. I realise why Colin's thing is funny, and this is what I was going to say after Macky's call. It's funny because you don't see it happen. You don't see
this is
him.
True.
I think if you'd just seen him arrive at a wake and go, "Hi, Warner, I'm a Bunny Graham,"
it's not as funny.
You'd get a giggle, but I don't think it would be as funny. I suspect that they would, if this had been a storyline in Coupling, you would have seen him arrive
Agreed.
At the wake and you'd have had the awkwardness. But since they couldn't do that here or whatever, it doesn't happen, and he just get Colin's version of events, which is much funnier.
Yeah, and it's much more impactful, I think, to have Colin recount it.
Well, what's great, because that bit, there's nothing in the background. He's in front of an entirely black background in the bunny suit. The camera's doing a very slow track in as he's telling this story. It's played as seriously as you can possibly get on television. Literally the most somber presentation.
Yeah.
And yet he's Agreed. Telling this ridiculous story in that outfit.
And it's something just, else.
The juxtaposition is brilliant. And speaking of outfits, shall we?
We shall.
Sting. Yes, it's Best Dressed, Worst Dressed, as sponsored by RamJackPodcast.com. I'll stop saying that like some kind of goofy radio DJ now.
That's fine.
Sponsored by
RamJack. It's time for the best. Yes. I've just gotten fired from my imaginary job as a radio announcer.
I think one. Yeah. If people continue complaining about the Dexter Fletcher accent, we should do an entire episode. In bad generic.
You figure, Governor.
Or yeah, you could do a Cockney accent. Oi! That would be funny.
Oi!
I'm going to have to stop doing this voice soon because it's really pissing me off.
Right, like!
All right, let's stop.
So, I would say for my best dressed, I'm going with Jeff.
Yeah, you're pulling the boat out with Jeff there. I've put my DVD away, so I can't check. I haven't had Linda for a while, if you care for what I mean. But I think once she loses the plaid shirt, and it's just, I'm very
that last
choice.
Overhead shot, Chris, when you see those leggings she's wearing.
Yeah. The full thing. It's a plain t-shirt. Yes,
that's true.
It's the polka dot skirt. It's fine. It's a sort of slightly mini-ish, slightly puffy.
Those leggings didn't do it for me though. I'm just letting you know.
No, I like those.
Oh, okay.
And
well,
the
then
black shoes.
Obviously, you do if you're going to nominate her for best dressed.
This is embarrassing to me, right? Because I think a lot of my best dress predictions here.
Yeah.
I'm different on this podcast than I am on any other because this is a series I watched when I was becoming a teenager.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, yeah.
So I think far more about the attractiveness of the women in it than I tend to do.
Yeah.
And it influences.
I totally get that. Yeah.
It influences my decisions a lot. In a way that I'm just gonna have to accept that it's happening. You know, I'm less of a weird creepo now, but I was 12 coming up 13 at this time, and that's a strange time. And which is why I'm often much more forgiving of some of the more 90s outfits. However, I may say more about that in a second. because as long as they look good and I would have thought they looked good at the time.
Yeah.
They are good to me. And this is a fine ensemble. I like it a lot. So, but Jeff is a fine outsider choice. And I have been meaning to pay more attention to the rest of the news team when it comes to this sort of thing.
I mean, we see Jeff in one teeny tiny moment and he was already, for me, best dressed. It was the gray and white striped t-shirt with the slightly rolled up sleeves.
That's a powerful look, Jeff.
And it was great.
Mm.
Jeff looked good.
Right. Okay.
Worst dressed.
Yeah.
So an obvious choice would be Colin, but fuck that.
Well, the thing is, Colin's is a costume.
It's a costume.
So I think it doesn't count.
Nope.
It could have been the most gaudy, outlandish
and
costume ever.
But when we first see him in it, he doesn't even realize he's wearing it. So how could that count?
Yes.
Meanwhile, Tiddler dressed herself that way on purpose.
Yes. And this, I think, I wouldn't have thought looked good at the time.
Yeah.
Even though it's the show is not from the 90s yet, but, you know, you can tell it's just around the corner. And that is super 90s.
Yes. in the most horrible way possible.
Yeah, and I don't just laugh at things because they're from the past.
Nope.
Because I once saw the Wrath of Khan at the Prince Charles Cinema, seemingly with an audience full of people who thought that everything that happened was fucking hilarious because it was from the past and some special effects weren't as good and people dressed differently.
People laughed at Wrath of Khan?
Yes.
What?
I'll tell you what, there's a bit where Kirk opens a door using a retinal scan and he goes up to it and they laughed at that.
Really?
Yes. That was an audience who found that hilarious. And yet, this still isn't the worst audience I've watched a film with.
Oh, interesting. That's ridiculous. That was, anyway, don't mean to digress any further. But craziness.
There's plenty of places to laugh in Wrath of Khan. And where and where I feel you're meant to.
Agreed.
It is very cold in space.
It is very cold in my Lincoln town car.
Corinthian leather.
Rich Corinthian leather.
We never had that here. I've never seen that advert. But really? I know that anyway because of cultural osmosis.
Yep. YouTube. Use YouTube. I'm sure it's on YouTube.
It's the same way I know shitloads about Gilligan's Island.
Oh.
That had like a one series run professor. Here prior to my birth, and I've never seen it. Yeah. I only encountered the theme tune for the first time a couple of months ago, which is just the fucking plot of the... The theme tune is what should have been a pilot episode, but they didn't previously have it. They just had a theme tune.
Previously on Gilligan's Island, here's the theme, and let's get into some very racist headhunter tribes.
Oh, dear Lord.
Oh, Chris, you have no idea.
But anyway, I think poor old tits there has to be the worst dress. She's got the worst dressed tits. Why am I saying this?
We have to get it out of our system. I'm just going to say fridge.
Why do I already know I'm not going to edit it out of the final product? I'm determined to be embarrassed. Yeah, anyway, she seems happy enough wearing it, but she's wrong.
Agreed.
However... find ping use, although I think Colin makes the best ping use, having it double as a bunny nose.
Yeah, his ping was less obvious at first to me.
Ah, there you go.
Yeah.
Stealth ping. Awesome.
Stealth ping. Well, I think that's it.
Yep, that is it, sir. Can you think of anything else you want to cover before the obvious occurs?
No, not at all. Really like this episode. Looking forward to the next one.
Fantastic. And we're nearly done at the time you would have been had to have been done by had you not had your schedule change.
Exactly.
So that worked out this extraordinarily well.
It really did. Yay.
Ah, lovely times. And as a nice capper to those lovely times, Mr. Illyrio, I would like you to provide us with the last word. No, don't do that, because I have to tell you the title of next week's episode.
Tell us what's coming up next time, Chris.
And you have to predict what's going to happen.
I can't wait to predict.
Oh, I nearly fucked us up. The next episode, Series 1, Episode 6, is Interface.
Interface?
Yes.
Do they get a modern word? They are going to get a word processing machine, an electric typewriter that remembers three lines of text.
Nice. I had a sort of Philips one like that once.
Yeah. Or a computer. It's going to be a Mac Plus.
Nice. I remember when I first typed Justified. I had a typewriter, but I had a little LCD screen where I'd type the whole thing out first, and then it would just go...
Yeah, those are the best.
Insane.
Friend of mine had that in high school. It was weird.
I think it's going to be an episode about a new violent South African student who's going to kick someone into face. I think I should start predicting them as well.
You should too.
Right, and now, no further fooling. Illyrio, please put us out of our misery with the last word.
Bandana.
rabbit. You got a beautiful chin. You got beautiful skin. You got a beautiful face. You got taste. You got beautiful eyes. You got beautiful thighs. You got a lot without a doubt. But I'm thinking about blowing you out. Cause you won't stop talking. Why don't you give it a rest? You got more rabbit than Sainsbury's. It's time you got it off your chest. Now you was just the kind of girl to break my heart in two. I knew right off when I first clapped my eyes on you. But how was I to know you'd bend my ear holes too? With your incessant talking, you're becoming a pest. Rabbit, 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 rabbit. Now you're a wonderful girl. You got a wonderful smell. You've got wonderful arms. You've got charm. You got wonderful hair. We make a wonderful pair. Now I don't mind having a chat, but you have to keep giving it that. No, you won't stop talking. Why don't you give it a rest? You got more rabbit than Sainsbury's. It's time you got it off your chest. Just the kind of girl to break my heart in two. I knew right off when I first clapped my eyes on you. But how was I to know you'd bend my ear holes too? With your incessant talking, you're becoming a pest. Rabbit, 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 yep, yep, rabbit, yep, 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 rabbit, rabbit, bunny, jabber, rabbit, yep, rabbit, rabbit, bunny, jabber, rabbit, yep, yep, rabbit, bunny, yep, jabber, rabbit.